can't expect the same amount of services for the same cost with a population that is no longer 200,000, but more than 300,000. It doesn't cost the same.
The Anchorage Assembly passes a budget, and the mayor vetoes parts of it. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 4th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the troubled run of Kuskokwim king salmon will again be managed by federal staff this season.
We expect there to be little to no harvestable surplus.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Alaska Pacific University is a private liberal arts and sciences university that emphasizes student engagement with the social, cultural, and environmental issues in Alaska and the world. This message sponsored by APU.
Alaska's largest city has passed its budget, but not without vetoes coming from the mayor's office and a last-minute deal over money connected to a utility the administration has proposed privatizing. The final budget is $484 million. To get there, Assemblymember L.V. Gray Jackson says a number of new staff positions related to public safety were dropped. In exchange, the amount of money the mayor's administration pushed to transfer out of the utility handling trash was cut in half.
The final compromise was that instead of taking $4 million from solid waste services, we only took two for property tax relief, but the public safety vetoes were maintained.
Gray Jackson was one of a handful of assembly members that challenged the mayor's budget during a meeting last week. They objected to the proposed fund transfer from solid waste services surplus and added in line items many on the assembly see as public safety necessities, including more dog catchers, a homelessness coordinator, and a senior planner to handle new zoning issues coming from growing marijuana within the municipality. The budget battle highlights a tension that's been a recurrent theme in Anchorage city politics during the Sullivan administration, public safety spending versus fiscal prudence. Gray Jackson believes the administration's emphasis on reducing the cost of government has become excessive amidst Anchorage's recent growth.
But you can't expect the same amount of services for the same cost with a population that is no longer 200,000, but more than 300,000. It doesn't cost the same.
But the administration maintains it's irresponsible to pay for new positions by asking more of taxpayers. Though this year's budget is a 1.4% rise over last year's, it's still nearly $2 million below the tax cap, something that Mayor Dan Sullivan believes is important amid a worsening financial outlook for the state.
My vetoes reflected, we didn't want to see additional spending and adding of personnel at a time when we're pretty sure we're going to see some reduction in revenue sharing and other state funding.
The Assembly ultimately approved the final version of the revised budget. Federal staff will again manage king salmon on the lower Kuskokwim River after requests from tribes. Earlier this year, a handful of tribal governments asked the Federal Subsistence Board to implement federal management. The Federal Subsistence Board deferred last month. But at a Friday meeting of the Kuskokwim River Salmon Management Working Group, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service leaders announced a plan for federal management. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
Federal staff plan to limit the Chinook fishery to federally qualified users from 32 Kuskokwim villages and manage the fishery day-to-day within the boundaries of the Yukon Delta Refuge. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service biologist Brian McCaffrey, the in-season manager last year, points to guidance from federal law and the weakened state of king salmon.
And so in a time of conservation need, a resource shortage, if anybody gets a shot at the resources within the federal conservation unit, it has to be first those federally qualified subsistence users. So by implementing that special action, we set that sidebar as the bounds within which then any additional harvest can occur.
Only residents of the 32 villages would be able to fish for king salmon under federal management. The reason dual management exists is because state and federal laws don't match. While both have subsistence priorities, federal law includes a rural preference the state doesn't have. Federal staff managed the King Salmon Run last summer on federal lands after the Federal Subsistence Board took action on a request from the village of Nipusqueak. Five tribal governments asked this year for federal management. The fishery's been in decline for years, and with another poor run expected, Yukon Delta Refuge manager Neil Lalonde says king salmon fishing may not be a possibility.
We expect there to be little to no harvestable surplus.
The state estimates the run at 96 to 163,000 king salmon. That's well below the average run of 240,000 fish. The drainage-wide escapement goal is 65 to 120,000 kings. Lalonde says his team is still working out the management details.
The season framework itself will look likely very similar to what it was last season in 2014. It wouldn't be things that are drastically different. We're just trying to improve on things that we did last year, how to be more effective in different ways.
One area to improve is the early season set net fishing. Managers expect to close the river in mid-May to big salmon gear and allow fishing for whitefish with 4-inch set nets for a period each week instead of the 24/7 fishing in 2014 in which thousands of king salmon were caught. If there are enough kings for some harvest, Lalonde says it's too early to say how the harvest would occur. They could implement a limited community permit system or, as the state's proposed, allow a very short king salmon fishing period with limits on net length to keep the number of salmon harvested to a minimum. At Friday's working group meeting, fishermen from the length of the river tried to make sense of what this year's version of dual management means. Working group chair Bev Hoffman emphasized that however it pans out, the goal should be the same for managers and fishermen.
We're going into another year of Chinook conservation, and that it's any opener or any opportunity, whether it be 4-inch or 6-inch, is not to target Chinook for the drying rack.
Members asked for consistency between federal and state regulations, which could change at ANIAC. The state retains management outside the boundaries of the refuge, and the federal action only concerns king salmon. The state has new management options that this year could make it easier to match federal rules. Those include requiring set nets to be within 100 feet of shore and limited drift net lengths. State and federal staff emphasize that they plan to work closely this summer and include the working group. The next working group meeting is not yet scheduled. In Bethel, I'm Ben Matheson.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the potential for a portable water system in rural Alaska.
So they could actually take it with them to fish camp. It has an electric pump for ease of use, or it has a hand pump if there is no electricity.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059.
What if you didn't have piped water and sewer, and the government wasn't picking up the tab to get you some? How would you find a low-cost system that you could keep running through the winter? As KMBA's Jacqueline Estes reports in this fourth segment of Kick the Bucket, experts are looking for answers to rural sanitation issues in Alaska.
Villagers and people in the water and sewer business can name dozens of ways systems have failed due to parts that shattered in the cold, say, or components that had to be flown in from Europe and installed by a Lower 48 specialist. Keeping it simple is not necessarily the solution when haul systems, where people pay by the gallon to get water delivered and waste picked up, leave them using as little water as possible, far below the 15 gallons a day needed for frequent hand washing. Brian Lefferts is Environmental Health and Engineering Director at the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation.
We recognize that there are some places that just the geology of the area won't allow for piped water and sewer to the home. But that the small haul system, the way it is, just currently isn't working. And so there's an a push to do research and development in that area to try to find a solution for those homes.
Some of the push is coming from the state, which is putting up money for innovative solutions through the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge. Bill Griffith is the Alaska Village Safe Water Facilities Manager.
We've established some performance targets that include things like sufficient water for health, affordable operation, feasible capital cost, constructability, long-term operability. We've also got some evaluation criteria like the requirement to go out and gather user input from communities. Also, we're looking for some innovative approaches to design.
The state has funded six teams to develop detailed proposals. Speaking from his office in Tok, Summit Consulting's founder David Kramer says recycled water will be part of theirs.
Water that comes from your wash machine, from your shower, that water can be recycled. It can be used to flush a toilet. It can be used to do laundry again and so on.
The Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation is seeking funding through crowdsourcing to work on its proposed solution. Leffert says recycled water is in their plans, too.
We're hoping that by reducing the number of hauls that are necessary by retreating the water within the home, we'll be able to make it affordable to the point where people won't conserve water.
Another popular idea is mini water and sewage treatment plants installed at each home. Standalone systems for several homes in Kivalina are the goal of an Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium project begun a few years ago. Project manager John Warren says this summer they'll install equipment that funnels filtered rainwater into a tank in the house and plumbing fixtures that conserve water. Because of flooding and fierce storms, villagers need to relocate. So Warren says the system is portable, giving the water treatment system as an example.
It has filters. You can put some chlorine in the water, and it's in full compliance with the EPA requirements, and it's safe. The treatment system that we're providing is also mobile, and so they could actually take it with them to fish camp. It has an electric pump for ease of use, or it has a hand pump if there is no electricity.
As for sewage, ANTHC plans call for the separation of liquids and solids and treatment of the solids to reduce the number of trips needed for disposal. While the competitors have been asked to keep details confidential, Summit Consulting's Kramer says reliability will come from sticking with the tried and true.
I don't think anybody expects to use space-age technology. What will go into these things will be products that are already on the shelf someplace, and the idea here is to combine them, integrate them in a way that's unique.
Leffert says he's optimistic the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge will result in new options, but he hopes those don't become the only choice for all rural communities.
There are still a number of homes that are unserved that can easily be served with traditional pipes and gravity sewer mains, and we know that that system works and can be cost effective, and we strongly encourage that we continue to fund construction projects to serve those homes using traditional water and sewer construction methods.
A few of the Alaska Water and Sewer Challenge teams will be funded to further develop their projects into 2018. But innovative alternatives are just one part of what's lying ahead. Next time in Kick the Bucket, we'll find out more about what the future holds. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The first big cruise ship of the 2015 tourist season arrived in Ketchikan on Friday. KRBD's Layla Carey was on the dock bright and early to meet the ship.
In its inaugural visit to Alaska's first city, the Ruby Princess brought more than 3,000 passengers and about 1,200 crew members. Louis Banda is from Los Angeles and had just gotten off the 952-foot-long cruise ship. He was snapping photos of his traveling companions as they waited for their tour bus.
I came with my best friend and my wife. We were actually interested since I was a kid, going to the Klondike and, you know, the visions of Jack London and all of that good stuff. It just was one of my bucket list things to do.
Banda says he's excited to finally be in Alaska and remarked how clean and crisp the air felt compared to LA.
I was weirded out a little bit with the actual sun going down like around 9 o'clock, you know, we got to see. And then it was 4 o'clock in the morning and I could clearly see outside. That was great. It was just mind-blowing, actually.
And you kind of lucked out. It might look cloudy to you, but this is actually a beautiful day for Ketchikan.
You know what? This is what I wanted. I didn't want anything sunny. I just wanted to feel the moisture in the air. I wanted to see the mossiness of it. I mean, it's just really breathtaking. I told my friend like 3 times I couldn't believe how beautiful it is.
Banda and his friends were taking a 5-hour tour through some national forest land, and then they'll watch the popular Great Alaskan Lumberjack Show before getting back on board the Ruby Princess to leave by late afternoon. In addition to cruise ship passengers, tour representatives were on the dock selling tours and rounding up clients to make sure they get on the right bus.
Hi, I'm Joe Linehan. I work for Lighthouse Eagles and Totems Excursion. I'm here as a dock rep today, but it's not my normal function. I'm a captain. I usually skipper the Totem Princess.
Linehan and his wife are longtime seasonal residents of Ketchikan. They come back every year to work in the tourism industry.
This is our 12th year, my wife and I, coming up here to work. And this is our second home here. As a matter of fact, we spend more time in Ketchikan than we do at our home in Florida.
A little ways away, but within sight of the big ship, Jay Matani was standing in the door of his Salmon Landing jewelry shop, Gold Rush. As he watched the first flood of cruise passengers disembark, he was cautiously optimistic about this year's tourist season.
Well, it's a beautiful day in Ketchikan. Hopefully it'll bring finances and money into the coffers of the town, too.
So are you excited for cruise season to start?
It's my livelihood. It's everybody's livelihood. Of course I'm excited. I've been here, this is my 20th year. I'm one of the oldest stores here, so.
What do you like about it?
People from all over the world, the interaction, the town is lively, people are happier.
Judging from the smiles on the dock, people were pretty happy, especially when the morning sun peeked through a break in the clouds. A good omen, perhaps, for the busy summer season. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
Sitka and Juneau will lose a week of fast ferry sailings this month. The Chenega will return to Southeast service on May 14th, a week later than scheduled. The vessel has been undergoing an overhaul, which includes replacing its engines. DOT spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the Chenega turned out to have corrosion in its starboard hull. It's being patched up for the season at the Ketchikan shipyard with permanent repairs planned for later this year. The ferry usually sails in Prince William Sound, but it's scheduled to fill in this month for the Fairweather, its sister ship, which is having an engine replaced.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, extending its support of Alaska residents beyond banking by supporting the programming of public radio throughout Alaska, giving back to the community. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
In those days, Harry didn't recognize that the price of admission to the life he wanted was surrendering his tickets to all the other lives he might have had.
That's Juneau resident Stuart Cohen reading the opening line to his new novel, This Is How It Really Sounds. This is Cohen's 6th book, and it's hitting bookstores now. While the opening line hints at the novel's theme, Cohen says the book revolves around 3 main characters.
One is the world extreme skiing champion circa 1992, who's almost not seen at all in the book. Another is this faded rock star in his mid-40s who has lost all his money and is an alcoholic. And the other is this sort of disgraced financier who's living large in Shanghai on his ill-gotten hundreds of millions of dollars and is hated the world over.
Cohen says that connecting the 3 characters was a challenge, but worth it. He says this novel is a departure from his previous works. This Is How It Really Sounds is available online and will be in bookstores soon. Think about being 16 in high school and standing in front of a group of friends and strangers telling a story, your story. That's what a new Anchorage organization called StoryWorks is teaching local students to do while helping them build community at the same time. KSKA's Ann Hillman reports.
20 years ago, when Regan Brooks was in high school, a teacher gave them an assignment: tell a story about yourself. Brooks can't recall what she wrote about. What she really remembers is a story a classmate told.
She shared a story in front of our whole class that abolished all my assumptions about her and really made me realize, oh, there's this person there that I haven't ever bothered to get to know and that I wanted to get to know more.
Brooks says storytelling helps people see each other differently, and through that new level of understanding, builds community. So that's the task she and a group of teachers and volunteers have given more than 700 students in Anchorage. Tell your story. Brooks launched the project in February of 2014, and since then has visited five of the city's high schools. She recently led a workshop at Service High in Anchorage.
Just have people bring their chairs. Okay, so I think what we'll do is...
Brooks moves out into the hallway with a group of students and prepares to listen to their stories and give them feedback. But first, some quick advice.
You want to try and begin your story without the word so at the end and end it without saying, and yeah.
So, just kidding. With that, 11th grader Kevin Goodman launches into a tale about the first time he went hunting with his father.
It all started on a muggy morning when we drove 7 hours up to Paxson, just about 70 miles from Glen Allen.
Goodman clicks on his pen incessantly as he tells about camping in the rain, wading through cold streams with jagged rocks, and trying in vain to find a moose.
You know the scene in Lord of the Rings where everybody has to duck because all the birds are flying over their heads? Well, it was kind of like that. Instead, we had a gun and we shot him.
Goodman says he chose to share that story because it sparked his imagination and was an important turning point in his life.
It was my first big week-long hunting trip. It was kind of a coming of age, I guess, for me. Because my dad's pretty strict on what your capabilities have to be for hunting. So that's what I chose.
And then he starts getting feedback. This detail is great. You didn't stutter at all. But maybe you should change some things. Story coach Jack Dalton, an accomplished Alaskan storyteller, chimes in.
How can you tell the story in a way so that when you get to the ending, we all go, oh, that's right. They didn't get the moose, but sounds like they still had a great time. Or they didn't get the moose, but wow. I can only imagine all those ptarmigan.
English teacher Lisa Wiley says that's part of the reason she wanted to get her students involved with StoryWorks, so they could get feedback from other people.
I can never get outside perspective on their work within my classroom. You know, it's always me as the audience. So this raises the level. The audience is now other people. So students respond differently to that. You know, they are trying harder because there are strangers looking at their work.
It's also teaching them reading, writing, and public speaking, all required topics in an English class. 2 weeks after the story coaching workshop, the students performed for each other, some enthusiastically, some with a bit of hesitation. But Wiley's already ramping up for next year, ready to have her students tell stories all over again. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
The Kenai Peninsula has no shortage of wildlife, but if you're planning to start a pig farm, the Kenai is definitely not the first location that comes to mind. There are only a handful of breeders open for business, but a family with a small farm in Anchor Point wants to change that. They're planning to bring a particular breed of pigs from Washington that could thrive on the peninsula. KBBI's Quinton Chandler has more.
Jenna and Brent Groberick's farm is tucked away in a small corner of Anchor Point, accessible by a couple of winding gravel roads hidden back in the hills. They moved from Southeast Alaska to Anchor Point one summer about 6 years ago because they wanted to build a farm.
What made you guys want to just go do that? Just buy land, build a house, get goats?
The goats were kind of an afterthought, and no, I'm just kidding. But I don't know, we've always wanted to do this. We both come from agriculture background, and we slowly got involved with the agricultural community, and it just seems like there is a big void to fill.
Locally sourced pigs are one of the big missing pieces contributing to this void the Grobarics see.
One of the reasons why we feel like it's important to have this resource here locally is because, A, when you bring animals in from different places, you could also be bringing in diseases, even though they're supposed to be quarantined and they're supposed to be health checked.
There's also the price. Jenna says Alaskans looking for live pigs are at the mercy of constantly fluctuating prices dictated by outside events.
Last summer, there was some sort of, do you remember what it was?
Hog cholera.
Yeah, some pig cholera disease that was going around. And so the supply was low and the demand was high. So the piglet prices went way up.
To help build a local stock that is isolated from these problems, the couple want to introduce a special breed of pig called Herefords to the peninsula. Hereford pigs are just one of the old heritage breeds traditionally raised by farmers before the age of the modern factory farms. A lot of heritage breeds are endangered now because big market suppliers don't raise them.
Like a factory pig lives in a 10 by 12 cell and never sees the sun. And that's where you get, you know, it's fed a corn diet, and that's where you get the white in the meat is from the specific diet. And these pigs are going to be out roaming around, and with exercise, they get, you know, their red blood cells and muscle tissue moving. So you get generally like a marbling of the meat, which is different for pork than you're used to.
The Grobarics are hoping people in the community will chip in to bring the Herefords to Alaska. The pigs will be shipped from a breeder in Washington State. Jenna says they're looking at about $250 per head for the males and $225 for each female, not to mention the cost to transport. So they put together a Kickstarter online.
We wanted to give the agricultural community here, even non-agricultural, for people that might be interested, they could support our Kickstarter and our project by purchasing ahead of time a finished hog.
What Jenna is trying to say is people can help pay the hog's way here by buying stake in the future hogs the Grobarics will eventually breed. They have a goal of just under $6,000 for their Kickstarter, and about $670 have been pledged so far. If they don't reach their goal by May 31st, the Grobarics say they'll take out a loan and pay for the pigs themselves. They are looking to buy 6 females and 1 or 2 males. They'll need 2 males at least if they want to sell breeding pigs to people interested in raising their own stock. In Anchor Point, I'm Quentin Chandler.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Ann Hillman, and Jacqueline Estes in Anchorage, Ben Matheson in Bethel, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, Scott Burton in Juneau, and Quentin Chandler in Homer. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Monica Goki is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
your friends, family, and neighbors at Raven Alaska, connecting over 100 communities across the state. Find out more at flyraven.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.